We've had a boo-boo. Oh.
We've had a boo-boo.
Now, this one, I'm not sure whether it comes under the heading technical boo-boo or human error boo-boo.
Or human boo-boo.
Yeah.
I've no idea what happened, but it wasn't recording.
We just recorded the greatest ever episode.
It was. Yeah.
In podcasting history.
Imagine Joe Rogan meets Mark Kermode.
And they're both surfing on adjoining surfboards and playing a full rally of badminton with each other while going along.
Whilst investigating a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah.
But actually to its conclusion with an ending.
Oh, Mike, that's salty. Was that a little dig at Serial?
It was a snide little snippiness directed at any true crime thing that doesn't actually have an ending, which is most true crime things. I've been raised on too much morse to be able to handle unclear endings. I want it tied up in a bow.
And you want the person who did it to go down and face tough and rough justice. Don't you?
I'm not interested in rehabilitation.
No.
Just crime and punishment, please.
Russian prison.
Yeah, that's what you want. You want all British criminals siphoned off into the Russian criminal system. Because you're sick of these prisons, aren't you, Mike? That are like bloody...
Oh, they're like centre parks.
And all paid for by Her Majesty's, at Her Majesty's expense of the tax man and woman.
Yeah, get him down a mine.
Get him down some kind of shaft. Doesn't he have to do a mine shaft? Could be a lift shaft.
Could be just disused lift shaft. Yeah.
Get him down a shaft.
The shaft of a bow and arrow into their brain.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Finally.
I hope the listeners are picking up on a degree of irony here.
There's a degree of irony.
I mean, the crime of who didn't record the bit of the episode we just recorded.
Yes.
We know who the perpetrator is there, Henry.
That's me. So I'm sorry. That's thrown me a bit. I think... It's thrown me now. I've just
because you're the victim.
Because I'm the victim and the criminal. I've robbed myself and the country. Some great chat about Ben's holiday and the sausages and stuff.
Well, we can't try and recreate that simmering banter. That's gone.
It's gone forever. I wonder if maybe we should...
write it as a play and get actors to perform it?
It'd be a tricky verbatim style play there because we'd only be able to give them 2/3 of the transcript.
That would be the thing of the play. So one of the roles is fully improvised by the actor on any given day.
Or do you just leave it blank and let the audience
fill in the banter?
Because Henry's like a sort of everyman character who the audience then embody.
Yeah.
Or is it one of those rotating cast ones where one night it's Trevor Nunn and the next night it's...
Johnny Lee Miller.
Johnny Lee Miller.
And then back to Trevor Nunn.
Yeah.
And then back to Trevor Nunn the following night.
And Claire Balding.
And then Claire Balding on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And then matinees, it's Nick Knowles for the older crowd.
And they're playing the Henry Packer role.
They're playing the Henry Packer
role. Right, so who's playing Mike and me?
You're playing each other, maybe.
Right, so I play Mike, he plays me, and then a rotating cast of celebrities plays you.
Yeah.
How are we splitting the money? Because me and Mike are having to do two shows a day, whereas you're...
Those celebs are going to take a big old chunk off the receipts, aren't they?
The celebs are going to take a huge chunk of it. I mean, if there's anything left after Balding's lawyers have been through the contract, I'd be surprised. They are very front foot.
Well, we have actually got the recordings of what we recorded that is my recording and Mike's recording.
Yep.
So we could get someone to fill in and try and work out what you might have said.
Maybe we could release it as the first ever podcast interactive game where people can download an incomplete podcast and just interact with your favourite podcast.
You are Henry Packer.
Here's your chance to be Henry Packer.
Do you want to change the subject to A, pigs, B, crabs, C, Russell Crowe? And then you can choose different outcomes to the conversation.
Is there audio gaming? I think we might have invented a whole new gaming genre here.
Audio conversational gaming. I could see it happening. Choose your own podcast adventure conversation chat. So all we'll need to do is record you guys in...
Which we do anyway.
Yes, which we do anyway.
Well, Ben and I do.
No, but what we'll need to do is we'll need to break down... Well, there's two options. One is we try and calculate every possible conversation that could happen.
I mean, we only do about four. There's talking about the royal family.
Exactly. There's not that many.
Talking about Russell Crowe.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like guessing a pin. Well, it's not like guessing a pin number. It's like guessing a pin number if it only had one number in each pin number. Do you know what I mean? Well, actually not. Yeah, and it was always between 0 and 4. That's one option. But the other option is we do it more like a sat-nav.
Right.
Where we get you guys to record every single word in the English language.
Ah.
From the dictionary. And then
that's quite work heavy.
And then the computer, well, it's a bit work heavy, but then the computer will then put the chat together. Mm. The only trouble with that is you'll get intonation problems. So it might be like, Prince Edward is being assaulted by a crab. Why? You know what I mean?
But your intonation there was perfect, Henry. So me and Mike are like AIs.
Yeah, you'd be AIs of yourself so that they can take the conversation wherever they want. The AI calculates the trouble with AI is they can get a computer to win at chess. They can get a computer. They can even get a computer now to feel the emotion of love and write poetry. But can they get a computer to banter? That's the final. That's the last.
Can a computer do lukewarm banter?
Once a computer can do small talk and chat,
yeah, then
we've crossed the Rubicon,
yeah,
and it's time up.
Then that's when we're all done for.
Yeah.
Because 95% of any enterprise is small talk, isn't it? So for the computers and the robots to be able to take over the Earth, they're going to have to be doing small talk in between, you know, strategy meetings to do with, you know, wiping out the major population centers and stuff.
Oh, you can't go straight into that.
You can't. You need to go, like, how's your day?
So did you have a good weekend? Which country should we eliminate first?
Exactly.
Have you heard about the new XB1429 circuit board? Ha, 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 ha. Hey. Well, it's hard to imagine robot banter. That's the point, isn't it? That's the point we're making.
I think your robot has got quite low self-esteem. He's not able to assert himself very much. He sounds like he's not sure what to say.
He's sort of edging around at the outskirts of a conversation.
Hey, I am suffering from a buildup of moisture in my fifth USB port. Know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, and then he gets it completely wrong and everyone's disgusted.
It's barely even 10 o'clock in the morning, Steve.
Yeah.
Please.
Put your USB port away.
Yeah, so as I say, it's hard to imagine computer banter. So that's probably one of the reasons why, at the moment, humans still have to do podcasts.
Yeah, when we can fully automate this, this will be quite good, won't it?
Yeah. Also, in terms of that, you know, yeah, that thing of, like, how difficult it is to calculate different combinations of things. I am.
Come again? The old PIN numbers.
The old PIN number. Yeah. I've got a bit of. But basically, it just reminded me that the other day I was going through the TV channels, zapping around, and I came across what appeared to be a documentary about the history of the subway chain. Subway.
Right.
Was it an advert?
It was like a 30-second documentary. With really zippy music, and it really rollicked along. Actually, it was. All documentaries should be like this. And it wasn't just a documentary, it wasn't just interesting because it told you about how good the sandwiches are, but actually had some suggestions at the end. For example, you know, recommendations of some good deals. This is the best documentary I've ever seen. It said that basically, apparently, all the different combinations you can have of a subway, right? Apparently, if you went to a subway every day for the rest of your life and had a different combination.
Probably quite a short life.
You'd need to live for 55,000 years to try all the different combinations.
But is that like, hello, today I'm going to have the Italian BLT and can I have 4 sweet corns and then tomorrow I'll have 5 sweet corns?
And can there be a gherkin, but can the gherkin be on top of the sub rather than in the middle of the sub? And can you throw it at me?
Can you throw the whole sub at my face?
Can you fire this sub at me from the end of an alto saxophone, please?
In fact, I've been working with a military historian and a baker, and I've invented this thing, which I'm calling a sub machine gun. Yeah? And so it fires over 200 sandwiches per second.
Each one freshly made in the magazine.
Each one freshly made in the magazine. I just want you to obliterate me with subs. That'll be one of the options. That'll be towards the end of the 55,000 years.
That's the final one. That's after the 55,000th year. Yeah. Obliterated by a subway.
Obliterated by a subway.
I was once, my big claim to fame is that I was the first person ever to enter the subway on Kingsway in London's Holborn district.
Well, well.
What?
When I was at university, I was walking past it. It was maybe 5 to 8 in the morning. There were loads of balloons outside. They'd obviously anticipated a queue because they had a kind of little roped off area. But there was no one there. And then the guy was like, oh, if you want to wait 5 minutes, you'll be the first person ever to walk into this subway and you can get a free.
And he thought, this is it. Of course, do I? Come on. Just wait till the folks from back home hear about this.
Hey, Ma, I was the first person on the subway today. I got a 3-foot-long meatball marinara.
Oh, what a way to start the day.
I got a balloon.
Wow.
Less useful. A Polaroid photograph of myself was up behind the counter for over a year.
No.
Of me, like, shaking hands with the manager, holding my foot-long meatball marinara.
That's amazing. Wow. Because it was their first one they'd ever made, though, did it have a kind of slightly nasty chemical smell? That, you know, when something's brand new, you sort of want to, you almost don't want to have the first one. I'd be a bit.
They haven't washed the machine oil off it yet, off the meatballs.
They might not have washed the machine oil and the chlorine and the various sort of chemicals off the bread.
Henry, it was delicious.
What kind of style of bread did you get?
I would have gone for Italian herbs and cheese, which is the only rational option, I would say. When you're going to a Subway.
In a meatball scenario, yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think in any Subway sandwich, why would you ever go for non-Italian herbs and cheese bread?
Political reasons.
It would have to be political, wouldn't it?
I'm reaching.
It would have to be political. Sure.
Okay, time to turn on the bean machine.
Okay.
This week's topic is sent in by Gavin. And it is... Jeffries.
My Route 1 brain immediately lurches towards the Rainbow Crew.
Oh, like Jeffrey, what was he? He was
Jeffrey Bungle and Zippy.
Yeah.
Was he a... Jeffrey was the man, wasn't he?
No. Jeffrey was a hippo.
Jeffrey was the hippo.
This was the stage when the podcast went very wrong. I would like to officially apologise on behalf of myself and the whole podcast crew. Jeffrey was not the name of the hippo in Rainbow. The hippo, of course, was called George. However, we continue to labour under this misapprehension for the rest of the episode. I believe this is my fault personally, and I am deeply, deeply sorry.
I think Jeffrey was the man.
No.
Wasn't he?
Jeffrey was a hippo.
Jeffrey was the hippo.
I think Jeffrey was the little, he was like a hippo and he would go, oh, Zippy, stop doing that, you weird little Zippy man. He was the kind of like...
He was the anxious straight man.
He was the absolute nerd, square dickhead.
Yeah.
Right, okay. That was Jeffrey the hippo. What was Zippy then?
Zippy was looked like an alien, I would say, with a zip mouth.
Yes.
That you could zip up.
Then obviously there's Bungle.
Bungle the everyman bear.
Is the Bungle Chewbacca lawsuit still going?
Bungle, he did have to get rid of his crossbow, I seem to remember, at one point.
And his spaceship.
I think Chewbacca won that one, probably.
Well, he had the heft of Hollywood behind him, didn't he?
I think Bungle v. Chewbacca in a fight. I think Bungle finds kind of reserves of really dirty fighting. And
I think
Bungle will
have a few surprises.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that would be like the Rocky one, where the film where Rocky goes up against a sort of the Russian guy.
The Soviet, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like technology versus just like bar brawl tactics. That's what Bungle would have.
Bungle's a street bear.
He's a street bear.
At the end of the day.
And so while Chewbacca was still trying to reload his... was it a crossbow he had?
He had a sort of laser crossbow, didn't he?
His laser crossbow. He was trying to get another bolt. Right, they're quite hard to manage, aren't they? They're sort of light bolts. You've got to sort of get your hand around a bolt
in a space quiver.
From your space quiver.
There's a lot of faff.
And before he's even sort of, lined that up, Bungle's just
bitten half his arse off.
Bitten half his arse off.
He's beating him across the head with a fire extinguisher. Just like...
Yeah.
Sure, he's been to drama school and he's got the RP accent and everything, but, you know, he comes from the other side of the tracks to Bungle.
Did Bungle speak?
Bungle spoke. I think Bungle often was the voice of reason. Perhaps now I understand it because they understood that if they went against Bungle's judgment, he'd tear them to pieces.
But what kind of accent did Bungle have? Was he like, shut it? Shut it, you little zippy cunt.
I'm thinking northeast looking at him. But that
might you having a look, are you?
I'm having a look at him online.
I thought he was like silent and kind of strong and silent.
Maybe I
remember him having an RP, sort of standard English accent.
How do you think?
Yeah.
Hello. Ding dong.
And then there was the human man. Who was he?
Now, he was called something like Geoffrey.
I feel like it was in the sort of Kenneth...
Oh, yes.
Graham, Malcolm...
One of the 70s, 80s sort of names.
Yeah.
Names.
It was a name where you really knew where you were with it, and therefore it almost didn't matter too much.
Yeah.
Which one it was. In the same way, in our generation, there's about 8 million Mikes.
Yeah.
And 8 million sort of, you know, Daves and Steves. And I have known people in my life who have called me Dave and Steve, and I've got to the point where I've not bothered to try and correct them anymore.
Because it's all much of a muchness, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just basically just the same.
One of them, those random blokes.
It's like if you're buying sweet corn, getting, you know, with niblets. No, it's like if you're buying...
Come again?
If you buy a can of sweet corn, is it the slightly salted or sugar-free? Or, you know, whatever the distinction is. Like, who gives a shit?
Or the ones with the caramel centre.
Yeah.
The end of the day.
It's like, who gives a shit? This is sweet corn. It doesn't matter. It's like, I'm talking to a Mike, I'm talking to a Dave. It doesn't fucking matter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not really
listening to what you're saying anyway.
It's the conversational equivalent of sweet corn. It's got no nutritional value.
Yeah.
It's just there.
You're if you were coffee, you'd be instant coffee. Exactly. We're being classified.
Yeah. But actually, I think you're right, because I'm just from a bit more Googling. I believe the man who played the human was called Geoffrey Hayes. Is that possible?
But what was his name in the show?
What was his nom de guerre? That's what we're after.
This is the problem with the time, is there were so many people called Geoffrey that you'd have a guy called Geoffrey alongside a bear called Geoffrey.
It was just, and that was accepted at the time.
Yeah, that was fine.
You've got a cast of four people. There's going to be at least two of them called Geoffrey.
There's going to be at least two Geoffreys, and you might be a Geoffrey portraying a Geoffrey, you know, as well. I'm doing a bit of research here into the cast. So confirming our theory that most people in the 70s and 80s were called Geoffrey.
Yeah.
The human character was called Geoffrey, and he was portrayed by the actor Geoffrey Hayes.
Which is exactly what you were saying before. Yeah, sometimes you do portray, you know.
Sometimes you'll have to portray
a character
someone of your own, and that's a particular challenge for an actor, isn't it? Because you've got to sail very close to your own wind, haven't you? But not too close. Have you ever played a mic, Mike?
I've played a mic. I've played a Michael as well.
There you go.
But, I mean, that's a treat for me. I don't mind that at all, because that means I'm playing a character that's got a name.
Okay, so that's a bonus.
As opposed to man selling Scampi 2. or Pete dismembered leg.
Yeah.
3, yeah.
Man complaining about some Scampi. Man who looks like he's just eaten some dodgy scampi.
You do get a lot of scampi jobs.
You get a lot of the scampi.
But that happens, you get to a certain age, you get all the scampi jobs. And you know.
Yeah, you get typecast, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. It's a job, isn't it? It's a living.
You're yet to play a scampi, though. That's the that's what you're after, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The number of times I've auditioned for scampi.
CGI scampi roles.
Or the singular of scampi, a scampoo.
There's even my spec screenplay feature film, Scampoo, that I've been sending it out for years now. I keep redrafting it, sending it to all the bigwigs. No one's taking it up.
Is that kind of like, what kind of tone are we going for? Is that like a sort of Oscar fodder style movie, or is it more of a kind of family romp?
It's very much a fusion of the two.
Right.
Yeah.
You're crying, you're laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's been tragedy. So it starts as a family romp, and that's what you think you're watching for the first half of the film. And then there's an absolute tragedy halfway through where all of his family gets battered and ends up in a basket.
Yeah. So it's kind of Pixar then. Pixar vibe.
Yeah. But I want it to be done in live action. That's part of the problem with the budget as well. Because I also want to be doing it with actual Scampi. The other actors should all be actual Scampi.
Oh, that work. Oh, that's good working with non-actors because people that really know the territory that know what they're like.
Exactly.
You get that kind of verisimilitude, don't you? Where you're using real. What are they like? Lobster tails? What are scampi?
The real lobster tails.
Well, that's one of the things with scamp with them. That's one of the reasons that the Scampus film has hit the skids.
Scampoo.
Has hit the skids, hasn't it? At the funding stage is
no one really understands what they are, but that's what I'm trying to clarify. And then it becomes a search for Scampoo who's trying to understand what he is now that he doesn't have. You know, he had the identity as a family Scampoo.
Mm.
Now he's lost that. What is he? Did he come from a bit of lobster? Mm. Does it matter?
And also the big question that we all wrestle with at least at some point in our lives is should you go for the scampi or should you just go for the cod like you normally do? The other question is always is scampi, because I like to think that, or I think I generally believe that scampi is a word that refers to the food version of an animal. So scampi is like pork or beef.
Bees.
Or bees.
No, Henry, you're right. It only refers to the tail of the animal.
But does it refer to the tail? Can you scampi anything? Like, is it a process? So in the same way that you can sausage anything.
Oh, I see.
You know, you can you scampi any seafood by turning it into little bits and covering it in batter? Because that's not, you've never seen you've never gone snorkeling and seen some scampi, have you? So I think that must prove something.
I think so far, right, in this episode, we've talked about two things, which I imagine our American listeners will have no idea what we're talking about.
Oh, God, of course, yes. Scampi is, very.
Because they'll call that something, they'll call it like, I don't know. Homily seafood tales.
Yeah. Yeah. Boston ball bearings. I have a name like that.
They will.
Atlanta ass fries.
They totally will. And they'll do them in a version that involves loads and loads of cheese. And it'll be really, really lovely. And you pour more of the cheese on. And then you add cheese to the cheese. And then you cheese up the sauce nice and cheesy. I love those. I love that kind of American cooking.
Mm. Can I do a mini Pompidou?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
I've thought for some time now that we need a jingle. I mean, this is me pushing my agenda. You know, you can tell me to shut up.
Mm.
As we all know, I'd like the episodes to be...
You're trying to squeeze out the chat.
90 to 95% jingle.
Yeah, I'm all in favour of that.
I think we might need an America jingle because every week we talk about the American angle on things because we're quite obsessed.
American jingle.
I think it's a good shout.
So in time-honoured three bean salad jingle tradition, if you'll each give me a genre and I will try and mash them together into the jingle.
Yes. What... Well, my first thought is the Star Spangled Banner, the electric guitar Jimi Hendrix version of Star Spangled Banner.
Okay.
I'm thinking more along the lines of your college marching band. That's what I'm thinking.
I mean, from my point of view, that would be literally impossible to recreate without
the Varsity Derby.
150 marching.
If you could give also the sense that there's a highly choreographed march going on. But from a bird's eye view, spells out the name of the names of all of the presidents of America since the get-go.
Okay.
And also you want a sense that some of the people creating the music are jocks and some of the people are nerds.
Mm.
Well, that's what you get with me, Henry. It's the perfect mix of nerd with that jock edge that I've got. You know me.
You are the perfect fusion of the two, aren't you?
I often wedgie myself.
Yeah.
Well, in lockdown, no one else to do it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Shoving our own heads down toilets, self-hazing.
You will sometimes just kick over a fire hydrant, won't you? And rip your top off and sort of beat your chest. Is that what they do?
Which films have you been watching? So, I'll whip up an America jingle.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
I wonder the way to do this, maybe we can just mention some American things, which I can turn into a jingle.
That's a good one.
So I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
Burgers.
Grits.
Mama's Hootenanny Pie. Where are your sneakers? They're in the trunk of my pa's Humvee.
How would you like your eggs, sir? Over easy or under easy? Or medium easy? Or not easy? Or quite easy.
Sunny side fresh.
On rye.
Freshly squeezed.
America.
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 I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
No one's ever gonna listen to this crazy new music you're making, Mr. Presley.
Burgers. And the reason that I brought that up was because I don't think Americans will have heard of Rainbow.
No.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered whether they have scampi or not, I think.
Can we explain what Rainbow was to them? Do you think they'll...
I think we've always need to explain that it was a children's program fronted by an alien with a zip for a mouth, a small hippo named George. The hippo's name was George. I'm deeply, deeply sorry. A bear.
And a human man.
And a human man called Jeffrey.
He did have a very good... I think quite a lot of 70s and 80s TV was like this, actually. It had an incredibly good theme tune, but the actual show was probably quite bad.
I can't remember the theme tune.
No, 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 rainbow.
Yeah.
Up above the streets and the hounds is rainbow flying high.
Oh, yes. So I would say for an American listener, Rainbow was our Sesame Street.
Yes.
Yeah.
So really, right. Sesame Street was our Sesame Street, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nowhere near as good as Sesame Street.
No.
Well, they saw our man in a bear suit and they raised it at Woolly Mammoth, didn't they? In the puppet race of the Cold War.
Yeah.
I mean, Bungle looks for all the world like a Soviet TV character for children.
I mean, there is a theory that it was Gorbachev in there.
And that was his back channel.
That was his back channel.
To try and ease tensions. It's the first step to Glasnost.
And he saw our way of life and he saw that the, through the repartee between Zippy and Jeffrey... that there was actually a better way of life, potentially.
From my limited experience of Jeffreys, I think Jeffreys do get a bit caught up in whether or not they're a Jeff or a Geoff.
Yes, that's the big thing. We've been skirting around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just face this head on. We can't run away from it forever.
Am I a J-E-F-F or a G-E-O-F-F?
Mm-mm.
And what does that say?
I always feel like if you're a GEOFF, it's a slightly pretentious move to try and anchor yourself in the public's imagination to the father of English literature, Geoffrey Chaucer.
Oh, really?
Because that's how he would spell it. So you're spelling it in this like oldie English way, and you're subconsciously going, I could have written The Wife of Bath.
And I've been knocking about. I've been busy.
The Knicht's Tale.
The Knight's Tale.
That's one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't there a bit where a guy... There's a bit in The Knight's Tale, I think, where a guy goes to the window of who he thinks is his lover to start a tryst with her. But then her husband, I think, gets wind of what's going to happen. So instead puts his arse out of the window. The guy kisses the arse and then says something like, what beard you hath grown?
So, hang on a minute. So he thinks the arse is someone's face?
The arse is the face of his lover.
Yeah.
The only thing that seems strange and different about this arse in relation to his lover is the huge protuberance of hair coming out of the arse.
Is the lip texture on impact.
Yeah. What beard you've grown? What about the fact you haven't got any facial features and you've just got a huge crack down the middle of two hairy orbs?
Well, finally, someone's saying it, Henry. Finally, someone's come out and said Chaucer's a load of balls. Well done, Henry, for being the first person to come out and do that.
He just needed a good editor. He needed someone to say, Jeff, this Ninesdale thing, mate, it's might have noticed a couple of sort of logic issues here.
Yeah, sorry, Geoff. Okay, yeah, Geoff. This bit with the arse makes no sense. Look.
No, it does, because it's dark. So it's fine. It's fine. No one will think about that. Don't worry about it.
Geoff.
Yeah.
You're full of absolute crap, okay? Wow. To be honest, the fact that you're the first writer in English is probably the only reason I'm not firing you right now.
Yeah. Well, you should give me some credit then, shouldn't you? Because I'm the expert.
Yeah. You know?
You say you're the first editor in the English language, but you know, where are your credentials?
Geoff, we love what you're doing, right? We love your work. There's a reason we published you. You're hot. You've got a huge
you're
following.
You're hot right now.
I'm tapping into the zeitgeist, right?
It's very sexy, this stuff.
And we love all the other Canterbury Tales you've written.
Yeah.
The other ones are great. The Parson's Tale.
It still keeps me up at night just wondering what it all, you know, does that clip.
What exactly a parson is. I know.
What exactly a parson is. It's brilliant.
But listen, Jeff, is there any way we can just leave out the ass-kissing?
People want a bit of blue. That's what they want. I'm sick and tired writing this family lit bedtime story stuff. I want to put a bit of blue in, all right? I'm thinking of going on tour. I'm thinking of doing some live shows.
The fact is the public love your work, yeah? You know, whenever I take the horse to work every morning, I can see other people on their horses going to work.
Listening to the audiobook.
Also, I want to ask you, what the hell have you done with my illustrations? I've done loads of illustrations. Where have they gone? Why aren't they in the printed copy? Where have they gone?
Well, they all involve a hairy anus at the centre of the...
It's the only thing I can draw. So why I had to put the hairy arse into the story in the first place. It's the only thing I can draw is a hairy arse.
Yeah, well, yeah, the hairy arse is wagging the dog, isn't it? That's the problem.
It's just... I mean, I do remember them as being very, very boring.
We had to do the Knight's Tale in school, and I mean, just imagine having to teach a piece of literature to loads of 13-year-olds where there's a bit where a guy kisses an arse. It was like a wonderful moment in my schooling. The scales fell from my eyes, and I realised life was for me. Life was worth living.
Can I say I had a similar moment at school when Dr. Custance. Mm-hmm. Who was my biology? Who was the biology teacher? Was teaching us about plant reproduction, and he had to say the word gonads in front of the class. That was my moment of like, you know what? I could see myself knocking about
of all boys, right?
Yeah, exactly. A class of boys. So he said, and it was with a diagram, and he said, and as you see here, the gonads. And as soon as he said the gonad, the entire class obviously cracked up laughing. It's just the funniest thing that ever happened.
Absolutely.
by miles. And what he did was he insisted on repeating it from the beginning. He went, excuse me, no, I'll start again. Now, as you can see here, the gonads, and we all cracked up every time. And he did it again and again and again. Getting more and more furious. Exactly. What are you trying to prove, Dr. Cassens? And he was trying to prove that the word gonads isn't funny.
And that it loses its potency over time.
Yeah.
But he's wrong.
Exactly. And if anything, especially as a teacher of science, he basically just conducted an experiment that proved, you know, beyond doubt.
His null hypothesis.
The word gonads.
This is not funny.
It's actually incredibly funny.
And to think he's conducted that experiment year on year. I mean, you weren't the first.
He knows that's coming every year.
Yeah. he's dreading that day. March the 3rd, every year.
Gonad Day. Yeah. And he starts getting grumpy with his family in the 2 weeks before that. And his wife will be talking to the children, just be easy on your father at the moment. You know Gonad Day's coming up. There's the big G. The big sparkly G that we put on the calendar.
But, Mum, why doesn't he know gonads is funny? Shh, please. Don't. Harriet, stop it.
Why doesn't he just say it once and then carry on with the lesson?
Why doesn't he just not teach those smirking bastards that bit of the book? Fine, they'll lose a percent in their exams. Forget them. Stuff them.
Exactly.
Skip it out. Move on.
Henry, are you telling me that also that plants have got gonads?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They got dicks, they got balls, they got everything. plants have got the, it's absolute, it's
they've got the full human genitalia.
They've got the full human genitalia.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Hey, hey, hey! Daffodils have got foreskins, Ben.
Daffodils have got foreskins. A tulip is basically a circumcised daffodil. They are absolutely disgusting, and they're doing it in plain sight.
3 in 100 sunflowers have got cock rings. That's just
a lot of sunflowers have cock rings.
People weren't talking about it before.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's where Prince Albert got the idea.
Oh, Mike, you've mentioned Prince Albert. We can play the new royal jingle I made.
Ho!
Bring it on.
All stand for the king.
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads.
On with the show.
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The regal zone. Regal zone.
I think that maybe for Dr. Custance, he'd be having to, you know, he'd been obviously dreading gonad day every year for, he'd been a teacher at that school for at least 20 years. And maybe the day, my gonad day, for him was his sort of falling down moment where he was
really?
I can't take this anymore. I'm going to say gonad over and over again until these children realise that I am a man who deserves respect. So he kept on repeating it, the thing over and over again, right? Every time slightly fewer children laughed.
But then you get that Stuart Lee thing where the laughter dies off, then it comes back.
Then it comes back again.
With the power of repetition. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So it gets less and less funny, and then it starts getting funnier again.
Yeah.
As he
becomes more agitated. And as it becomes more and more clear that the word gonads is simply, no matter which way you approach it, fucking hilarious. It's a funny word. Gonads.
It's a funny sounding word.
It's a funny sounding word. And in the lips of, you know, from the lips of Dr. Custance, a slightly sort of befuddled, you know, elderly biology teacher. Himself a man from a previous era, you know, from a different era, a kind of.
When gonads were respected.
Well, when gonads was how you greeted people.
Gonads.
Gonads too, my good man.
Gonad Day was a great pagan festival celebrated across the land.
Exactly. When men and women would all, and children would all dress up as gonads. And they would walk stony-faced through the streets of the villages of Britain.
Dragging a giant gonad.
dragging a giant gonad behind them. And literally no one even cracked a smile, did they?
Yeah.
Bring out your gonads.
And there'd be gonad bands. There'd be where all the instruments were different, were like hollowed out gonads, dried up gonads.
Gonad pies, savoury and sweet.
Yep. Iced gonads for the children.
And gonad mead. Lashings and lashings of gonad mead.
Sweet, sweet gonad mead. And, you know, a sort of minstrel would tell
tales. The gonad ear.
The gonad ear.
You'd gather.
Would gather, everyone would gather around him, and he would tell, the founding myth story of the United Kingdom, which is a giant gonad rose up through the oceans.
King Alfred's father, Chief Gonad.
King Alfred's father, Chief Gonad, rode that gonad up from Atlantis. Surfed across the waves.
Like a gonad popping up in the bath.
like a gonad freshly, you know, enjoying its newfound buoyancy and just popping its head over the over the surface of the water as if to say, hi, I'm a gonad. And there's nothing funny about me. All right. Yep. But yes, so he kept on repeating the gonad, this bit of the lesson, repeated it over and over again. He told us he wouldn't carry on with the lesson until he could deliver the line with the word gonads in it, and none of us laughed. And until that happened, we'd be stuck in what he didn't really think this through, because actually quite an attractive proposition for us would be stuck in a situation where Dr. Custance was repeatedly saying the word gonad.
For the rest of your life.
For the rest of our school days. Which basically was about as good as it could get. But he kept on repeating the line over and again, getting more and more angry, but eventually the boys quietened down. We all quietened down. Mm. And basically eventually he managed to say the line about the gonads, and no one laughed. There was this pause, this pregnant pause. Ironically pregnant, as if inseminated by the very gonads of which he spoke.
Beautifully done, Henry.
No worries, mate. Cheers.
Chaucer-esque.
And but except I just pissed myself then. I was the only one who laughed. There was a big pause, and then I just couldn't contain myself, and I absolutely pissed myself. And he punished me. I had to do detention, and I had to write a 4-page sort of treatise on gonads.
No.
Yeah. So wow. I had to write a whole 4-page thing about what gonads are and how they work.
And how they're not funny.
And how they're not funny.
You put all the minstrel stuff in, right?
All the minstrel stuff went in. A lot of that stuff went in. Fanny Rhythm, Kingdom, all that stuff went in.
Of course, the Jeffrey we haven't mentioned so far is Bezos.
Oh, my lordy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well done, Mike. If we had let that go, we'd have... His penis-shaped spaceship would have been flying over our homes and dropping its massive knacker bombs on our houses, killing us.
The cock and balls spaceship was amazing, wasn't it?
Incredible.
It was an absolute beaut.
It looked like someone was going on a very, very expensive hen do and had upped the ante from limo to cockshaped.
Billionaire's hen do.
And had upgraded the location from Barcelona to...
to space.
Space.
See you at space.
Or it also looked like perhaps there'd been a bit of a mix-up potentially with the designs or something for the spaceship, and that maybe the lead scientist had lost the designs and had just picked up a piece of paper which his 13-year-old son had been doodling on. It did have that sort of vibe.
That's all looks about right.
No, that'll do. It's aerodynamic. I mean, the penis is aerodynamic, isn't it? That's why...
That's why you run faster when you've got no trousers.
Yeah, that's why the old hunter-gatherers, they evolved to... Yeah. Pierce through the air,
exactly.
As they fled from a saber-toothed tiger.
Exactly.
You do get a boner, don't you, when you're... Well, one can get a boner when threatened.
Oh, I do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The smallest threat. Even if it's, if I've given someone the wrong change or something like that.
When you're working in your little shop.
In the bric-a-brac, down the bric-a-brac.
So, I didn't know about that, that people, you get aroused when you're threatened.
There is like I think it's like an adrenaline thing, but...
Is it a genetic thing where your body's going, right, worst case scenario, we're about to die, we need to reproduce now. We're like, now.
Flight, fight, or fuck. No, not fuck. The fuck shouldn't be on the list. It's flight or fuck.
If this bear is definitely going to kill me, 100%, I might as well try and fuck
I'm going to impregnate it first.
I'm going to have sex with the bear. Yeah, impregnate it.
And that's how Bungle was created.
Exactly. And that's why the phrase is, a bungled robbery, is if during a robbery you start having sex with a bear.
Mikhail Gorbachev has appeared,
yeah.
Drunk in a bear costume.
Yeah. Then the robbery's definitely gone wrong.
More Jeffs. Jeff Capes.
Ah.
Yes, the wrestler.
Jeff Capes.
Geoffrey of Monmouth.
Oh,
cool. Chronicler of Old Wales.
Of course, yeah.
Good man.
Geoffrey the Giraffe from the Toys R Us adverts.
Oh.
That's not ringing any bells.
I do. I remember his face on the sort of logo on the ads.
Is he the sucky giraffe that tiny children like to suck? Is it that one? Is it
You've lost
toy?
Me there, Mike.
I don't think so.
There's some giraffe. Someone has made a sort of little rubbery giraffe that for some reason, there's something to do with the texture of it and the shape of it, is there is no baby in the world that doesn't want to suck its face off.
Is that based on some like old evolutionary thing where in thousands of years ago, young Homo erectus used to suck on a baby giraffe's face to get to sleep?
I suspect so. I suspect something primal has been tapped into, but I don't know if the engineers knew they were doing that at the time or if they were just channeling something deep within themselves. It's a bit like the people that made the magic roundabout. You know, somehow something came out that just worked.
But I think that's why then their necks evolved to get longer and longer, because they didn't like getting their faces sucked
babies
by Homo erectus.
Oh, I see, giraffes. Right.
Yeah, so to stop their getting their face sucked by Australopithecus, whatever it was,
they developed long,
their head got
longer and longer necks. And then, of course, Homo erectus got more and more erectus, got more and more straight. But then, of course, the giraffe's head won the neck race, essentially,
over
Homo erectus. And that's why Homo erectus first invented tools, because obviously the first known tool
was the ladder.
It was the step ladder. and then the stepladder, and then when that was too high again,
they invented the pulley system.
Right. And then of course the fire engine with a retractable ladder.
And then hammers.
And then from then, chisels. Then obviously, because the firemen would get hungry, then soup bowls, pots.
Yeah.
Yeah, and chisels, etc.
Firemen would insist that someone can at least invent fire.
Yeah. Otherwise they would define. They were basically spending a lot. All they were doing was sitting around the station playing cards. There was literally nothing else.
Yeah, we're a bit of a show pony. Otherwise, it really needs to be some.
Yeah.
The potential of a fire, at least.
And obviously, they could get up to the giraffe's head using the ladder, and they would slide down the giraffe's neck when they were called upon. And that, of course, led to the fireman's pole.
And then they're also like, you also need to start domesticating animals, because at the moment all these cats that are about, they can get themselves out of trees, so we need to make sure that we modify those cats so they can't get out of trees, please. Exactly.
Well, originally it was cats stuck on a giraffe's head, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
And then once you've got firemen and fires, you then need sandwich shops.
Yeah.
Run by beefy Italian Americans.
You need Hindus so that people can dress up as sexy firemen and undress themselves. So then, of course, the concept of marriage evolves. And the family unit, urban conurbations,
and then you need reverends, you need wedding DJs.
You need wedding DJs.
Organized religion.
Obviously, once you need wedding once you have wedding DJs, you need music for them to play. So therefore, then people start.
Someone's got to invent vinyl.
People start whacking stones together, and then eventually, inventing vinyl. And once you've got vinyl, people.
Well, then you've got needles, and then people get the idea for swords and spears and so on.
Yeah,
war breaks out.
Yeah, exactly.
Cut to 2021. Here we are.
There's just a baby sucking on a plastic giraffe with no idea why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No idea of the context.
Yeah. But a giraffe somewhere on the savannah breathing a sigh of relief.
Yes. Also thinking, classic, just my luck, I actually don't need this neck anymore. Well, I've just got to make the most of it, I suppose. Just muddle along with this fucking ridiculous neck. That's completely pointless.
Okay, time for your emails. Thank you to everyone who sent us an email. The email address, as ever, is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. This first one is from someone called Paris. Hello, Beans. Oh, the subject title is called The Preciousness of Life.
Ooh.
Which I very much already am on board with that, because I agree.
Well, they might say that it's not.
But
so hold,
there
hold,
isn't any.
Hold on to your hollyhocks.
Okay, I'm going to hold my hollyhocks.
Hello, Beans. Whilst I was listening to your flag-themed episode, a fighter jet flew over my house. And it was so loud that for around 15 seconds, I was sure it was going to careen through my roof and kill me. The thought that my last moments were spent listening to Henry Packer describe the trials and tribulations of trying to remove a stubborn stain from his rug. Was incredibly sobering.
Mm. Yeah.
I softly said, no. Not in a panicked way, just with a sense of defeated acceptance. Thankfully, the jet continued on, and I now appreciate life just a little bit more.
Wow.
So it was the implication is that Paris thought it wasn't a good way to go down. To meet the next step, whatever that might be.
I mean, it's an extraordinary way to go down, I think.
Or maybe it was more a sense that she didn't want to die not knowing the end of that story. Which I don't need to remind everyone is that I didn't manage to remove the stain.
Well, Paris says, also, I have yet to encounter a carpet stain that mouthwash hasn't been able to get out.
Wow. There we go. There's a life hack or carpet ruiner, depending on which way that goes.
Oh, but what they might be doing is using one of those tricky double negative things to trick us, you know? So they're going, I haven't met anyone that hasn't. No, hang on. They said, I haven't.
So they say, I've also yet to encounter a carpet stain that hasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
That mouthwash hasn't.
So
been
what
able
does that mean?
Out.
I haven't come across a carpet that mouthwash hasn't been able to. No one's going to unpick that. We haven't got time. That could mean anything. Do you know what I mean? Honestly, be wary. Beware people that come bearing double negatives like that, because often they're trying to trap you. It could be that what Paris is actually saying there is that mouthwash has never worked on a stain.
Well, they're saying the precise opposite.
Well, they're saying they've never had a carpet that it didn't work on. What the hell does that mean? Did it or didn't it? I don't know. They've never come. You can't unpick that. It's a clever trick. Hats off to Paris, but I'm not today. No, I'm not going down that route. You're not fooling me.
Well, Paris, I think I speak for all three of us when I say I'm glad that you weren't killed by a fighter jet hitting your house.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
I get behind that as well.
With caveats.
With a couple of key caveats.
Okay, the next email is from Scott. Scott writes, Dear Beans, I wanted to thank you for providing me with the most horrifying night of my life.
The live show?
That's harsh. Okay, there were some teething troubles, okay? Yes, there was a few points where we didn't quite know what we were doing.
Yes, Mike was wearing flip-flops.
Yes, Mike was wearing flip-flops. Yes.
Didn't know quite how to end the show. Sure.
Yes, I occasionally became mesmerised by the comments that were coming in on the screen thing.
But it is a screen.
But it is a screen.
It's a screen.
The culture.
They're inherently mesmerising.
Trained me to be mesmerised by it. And yes, Ben was clearly sexually aroused throughout the hour.
But it was an adrenaline thing.
That's because he was scared.
He
was scared of
frightened.
A Spurbsy attack. Yeah. And he knew that the one thing between him and being taken down by Spurbsy was his boner and the possibility that he could impregnate and reproduce with Spurbsy before dying.
Or at least it would slow him down. It's an obstacle in Spurbsy's path.
Yeah.
Scott continues. Recently I became very ill as a result of an infection and unfortunately suffered from the effects of the dreaded fever dream, which on this occasion starred you three clowns. Is that, Mike, you're... As a former doctor, is that a thing? You can get an infection and have a fever dream that includes podcasters you listen to?
Fever dreams absolutely is in extreme fever dreams. You summon podcasters into your dreamscape.
Okay.
That's been the case since even before podcasting existed.
Yeah. So people would...
That's how Mark Maron came up with the idea of his podcast.
Well, of course, one of the symptoms of the Black Death was picturing Joe Rogan, wasn't it?
That's why there are so many illustrations of Joe Rogan in medieval churches up and down the country.
And
Joe Rogan was telling you that the Black Death isn't real, actually, and you just need to eat more food.
And that's why plague doctors wore those very long, pointy...
The beak face.
It was to, to accentuate the...
Joe Rogan's beak.
Joe Rogan's beak.
He continues, for 16 hours, in a state of delirium, as I became unaware if I was truly awake or asleep, the barrier between reality and the dream world disappeared entirely as I sweated feverishly, freezing one minute, agonizingly hot the next. I had the pleasure of you three sat next to my bed all night in director's chairs, randomly shouting catchphrases from the show at me. For example, and now it's time for the Pompidou section. Pompidou, Pompidou, in a loop for at least an hour, and then suddenly broken by a cry of digestive tract talk. Your bedside manner left much to be desired. I was praying by hour 8 of my ordeal for someone to introduce a Rio into the room to mercifully and swiftly bring to an end my suffering. So thanks again for that. Scott from Torbay.
So it sounds like our side hustle of comforting victims of feverish illnesses is not going very well so far. It's a poor review.
Yes, of course, what he doesn't realise is that... Because we've been trying to move into the,
the fever state care sector.
which we believe could be very, very lucrative going forward. And what we've been doing, a couple of pilot schemes, and maybe we should just tell him now outright that actually that wasn't a dream. We were in his bedroom.
We were there, £7 an hour.
£7 an hour.
We'll be sending you the invoice.
And also, they'll need to pay for our accommodation that night in the Marriott, which we didn't use because obviously we were in his bedroom, but we needed it to store bags. Well, we didn't end up using it to store bags because we just left the bags in the car.
Well, we used it to store the euthanasia rear, which obviously we didn't deploy in this situation.
Yeah.
Because you've got to book that in advance. You can't do that in the middle of a fever state. Otherwise, there's sort of consent issues. And
yeah. So the rear was on standby in case we had to terminate the client, is the phrase we use, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. But also, you do have to pay that surcharge then to the Marriott directly to ameliorate the damage done to the room by the rear, which was extensive.
Which is huge. And it turned out the rear, not a nice story, the rear turns out was a bit of a piss taker, ended up inviting a few other rears round. And they just saw the whole thing as a jolly. They weren't taking it seriously at all.
Well, it's Torbay, isn't it? It's kind of,
yeah.
It's the English Riviera. It's
they were excited, very overexcited.
Yeah. So they pecked the, bodies pecked the room very, very badly, didn't they? One of the people that was sent in afterwards to clean up said it was almost more peck than not, wasn't it? The room. It was so pecked. It was almost more a case of pointing out which bits of the room hadn't been pecked than which had. Quite vivid.
Yes, I remember that.
And you basically have to, you get someone then in the room next door to basically panel beat back out the the pecks so it's flat again.
Well, yeah, do you do that or you get a friendly rear to come and peck the last final bits? And
well, so then it's 100% pecked.
So at least it's evenly pecked all the way around, and then you just rebrand it as a peck switch. You've just got a slightly bigger room in every direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some teething troubles with that venture,
yeah.
But we'll get there in time.
And if you want to book us, what's the website again?
It's Riding the Fever Bean.
Riding the Fever Bean, that's it.
.com.uk.
.com.uk.
That's right. And do remember to book the rear in advance, as Mike says, because people, they're screaming for it often, aren't they? Bring in the rear.
And in that
sorry, space. We can't. It's back at the Marriott, sorry.
And obviously, if the euthanasia rear is deployed, we can guarantee that it's 100% painless for the rear. The rear will not suffer
humane.
At all. But it will essentially... It's basically the nearest thing to being a human being put through a shredder, isn't it? That's how we describe it on the website.
But quite a blunt shredder, a very strong, blunt shredder.
Possibly an old shredder.
Well, put it this way, often when we finish the job and we're on our way home, I go, oh, does anyone fancy pulled pork?
That's right. Yeah. it's as if your flesh is being gently parted by the two forks dragging the pork meat across.
But it's not ready yet.
It's not ready yet. If imagine the pork's completely raw, but you're having to use two forks to try and separate the flesh.
Which you will be. Because you won't have been boiled.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be completely raw.
Well, unless you tick that bit on the website, yes. You can be boiled, of course.
Which again has to be done in advance.
Yeah. In which case, you will have to pay for the human-shaped skillet, which will need to be, obviously... adapted to your own proportions. I mean, we can use a standard shark poacher.
save you a few beans, won't it? But
it'll save you a few quid.
If we're in a decent hotel doing it, sometimes we can use the trouser press. but it very much depends on the quality of the trouser press. In the Marriott, absolutely every time.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, get on the website. Check it out.
Also, as just the last thing on this, of course, if you book the package, you do get a free bag of Schneider's jalapeno.
That's right.
Pretzel pieces, just
yeah.
Which is also technically for you now a lifetime supply of Schneider's.
Yeah,
depending on how you want to look at it.
Now, our next email pertains to our friend Schneider's, the snack, the official snack of the Three Bean Salad podcast.
Yeah.
David writes, "Hi Beans, a friend who runs a bar has received the below message, which they've attached." From Schneider's of Hanover, confirming an immediate halt to all exports globally for 6 to 12 months.
Thank God I've been panic buying and storing them up for years.
Apparently, due to new European food standards on refined oil quality, they can't be brought into the country.
Do they make them in a refinery? Wow.
I've got a bag of them in my kitchen. The value on those is going to rise and rise, right?
Over the next 6 months. Rocketing as we speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got in a fist fight over a packet of Schneiders over the weekend. Sure. Yeah.
It's horrible to watch, isn't it, people?
Last 12 in the shop. What else are you going
to
do?
Also, the ramification here for American listeners to the podcast who are eating Schneiders are now doing so in the knowledge that they're deemed unfit for human consumption in another part of the world.
What a time to be alive.
All right, final email. This is from Jazz. So Jazz emailed us last week, or we read out Jazz's email last week, because they had been to Antarctica.
Oh, yes. Oh, good. They've got back in touch.
They have, and they write, last episode you asked why I was in Antarctica. Was I an expert on animals or something? I'm going to out myself now. I am the scientist who works on the deep past.
What?
And wrote to you in series one. Whoa. To say that I didn't think that octopuses came from space.
I remember that, yes.
They wanted to be anonymous back then because they were worried of getting in trouble.
Oh, yes.
Slagging off the people saying that octopuses might be from space. But they've revealed themselves. It's Jazz.
Yes, I remember that person with a wacky theory that octopuses weren't from space. Slightly sort of harebrained.
So the reason that they were in Antarctica was they were collecting microorganisms from glacier surfaces and studying them to try and understand their ecology and survival mechanisms with an aim to find out how life survived 650 million years ago when the entire planet was frozen over. As for generally what we get up to in the polar regions, there's a fair amount of finding the best beautiful clear glacier ice to put in your G&T.
That's cool.
Running away from angry fur seals.
Well, I'm not surprised they're angry if you're calling them fur seals.
Yeah. Well, pissed up on G&T.
Exactly.
You can call them a fur seal. They are a fur seal.
Yeah, but they don't want to be thinking of themselves as fur seals. They're much more than a handbag, these guys. Much more than a suitcase.
Oh, I see. Like, it'd be like calling a pig a pork pig.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A bacon offer. It's just bloody rude at the end of the day.
To step into the flightless bird zone for a second, cue the jingle.
Welcome to the Flightless Bird Zone.
No, please, not my face! I did also help the bird zoologist weigh teenage penguins before their first trip out to sea. Penguins absolutely belong in the Flightless Bird Zone, as we came out of this experience with several bruises after being repeatedly bitten and slapped by angry teen penguins.
Slap!
That's excellent.
My field partner Becky got a nasty bite on the head after I held a penguin too close when she was kneeling down.
It's a mistake you only make once.
You know what? I think penguins are a bit like teenagers in that one by itself is sort of quite sweet and amusing, but you wouldn't want to walk through a gang of them.
They just need more to do. That's all it is.
Yeah.
They just need to be setting up a little penguin youth centre
with
a bit of snooker, darts board, and sure, a library. Why not?
Yeah.
Hey?
Yeah.
Enough all to do in Antarctica for a teenage penguin.
And, you know, they're dressed for the occasion, so what about a full 19th century sort of ball? You know what I mean? A ball.
Yeah.
Ball music, ball snacks.
Waltzes.
Use a bit of your budget to get a chamber orchestra on the
get
go.
Get a chamber orchestra. Canapes being circulated. A
couple of chandeliers.
A walrus maitre d'.
And you're away. Yeah, you could get a what are the other animals you get down there?
Orcas.
I think maybe walruses are only North Pole. I've got that wrong. I don't know.
Oh yes, because there was a story in the news about an Arctic walrus just the other day.
He lived in Wales for a bit. Came to live in Wales.
And made it to Cornwall as well. Yeah. Got lost.
I think in the South Pole you get you don't get polar bears because they're in the north. Is it just penguins as far as the eye can see?
Yeah, I tell you what, pole experts, they do like a bit of the old, but you don't get penguins at that one. Oh, no, but you don't get polar bears at the other one. You don't get people fishing through holes at that one.
Are you saying that Jazz is likely to be a pedantic bore?
I just feel like it's part of my thing now that I'm slightly rude.
Quite antagonistic about the lesser
writers. Quite antagonistic to the emailers.
I like the sound of Jazz and Jazz's adventures.
Well, thank you for your email, Jazz.
Thanks, Jazz. Yes,
thank you, Jazz.
All right, final email. This one comes with a theme tune. We've got another theme tune.
Oh, wow.
So Will writes, "Hello, Beans. Given your skyrocketing fame and popularity," not sure about that, Will, "I predict you'll likely be making the move over to the big screen any week now."
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, true.
"Here's a pitch for your show."
Okay.
"Law and Order, Flightless Bird Division."
Yeah.
"Mike plays the grizzled by-the-book captain of the team."
Mm-hmm.
"Ben, the enthusiastic rookie who recently broke a budgie smuggling ring."
And sexy honey trap time.
Henry, the jaded loose cannon of the team.
What?
"Who lost his family to a Rhea mob attack."
Don't take me back there, goddammit.
"I've attached the potential theme tune here. Good luck in Hollywood." So to play us out, here is Will's Law and Order sort of themed version of our theme. Thank you, Will. Thanks to everyone for listening. See you next week.
Thanks, Will.
Cheers all.
Bye.
Ta-ra. Thank you, bye.
"For once you're going to do things by the book, goddammit, bagger. Meet your new partner, Partridge."
"Goddammit, I told you I will not work with flightless birds. Can't you dig up a rookie sparrow somewhere?" "There's ostrich shit all over my goddamn desk."